Dennis Moynihan and Julie Crosby. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira are our engineers. Also, special thanks, Becca Staley, Hugh Gran, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Vesta Godarz. Tomorrow night, Juan Gonzalez will be speaking at Rutgers University. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. To see transcripts and get video and audio podcasts of Democracy Now!, you can go to democracynow.org. Again, we'll be doing a six-hour broadcast on midterm election night. I hope you tune in. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Alebrijes, the Milagro Theater annual Día de los Muertos theater production, running weekly on Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays until November 11th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Alebrijes is a family-friendly production of real-life artist and Alebrijes creator Pedro Linares delves into his world and fictionalizes it to create this Día de los Muertos story. Full of mythical creatures, psychedelic jungles, song, dance, and larger-than-life puppetry. Again, that's Alebrijes, the Milagro Theater annual Día de los Muertos theater production, running weekly on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays until November 11th at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City, a monthly beat and rap night at the Liquor Store in Portland. On Friday, October 26th, Thirsty City hosts Los Angeles-based Mike Slott and Jansport, along with sets by Omari Jazz, Rap Class, Bravo Domo, and Slurgeon. KBOO's Northern Draw will also be DJing. Again, that's Thirsty City at the Liquor Store, 3341 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Is 8:02 a.m. and you are listening to KBOO, KBOO. I'm Amory Shack.
And I'm Carrie Waters.
And you are listening to
Native Voices from the Edge. We are so excited to be here today. It's our last show in our series. It's been just about a year since we started.
It's bittersweet.
It sure is. We came on board last November, starting to take on Joanne's show since she's been campaigning and focused on Native American Heritage Month. We've had so many amazing conversations. Mm-hmm. November, May, October, the time has just flown by.
It's so true.
Oh, but, so good.
But the midterms are coming up, which is why we bid adieu.
Yeah. Yet, so, you know, we have had some conversations on this show about housing. So we're going to continue that conversation today. There are, as many of our listeners may be aware, lots of conversations around tenant protections, both locally and statewide. Some folks might remember House Bill 2004 in the 2017 legislative session, which pushed for tenant protections, just cause eviction, and I know we don't call it rent control, but something, we'll get into that conversation about these different terms and implications from all of them. Portland City Council had also recently passed some mandates around relocation assistance and other tenant protections that could be passed at the local level without that statewide bill. So we're going to have a conversation about what's happening elsewhere throughout our region. Mm-hmm. We've got two fabulous guests joining us in the studio this morning. We've got Deborah Olson, who is working with Gresham Housing for the People Coalition, and Keith Schultz, who's also working with Gresham Housing for the People and is also affiliated with Bus Riders Unite with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon. So welcome to our guests.
Thank you very much. I'm Deborah Olson, and it's a pleasure to be here. I did not realize this was the last day. it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And I'm glad that we're able to take you out with a bang here.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
I'm Keith Schultz. I'm a disabled renter, transit dependent, and that's what that's why I'm here.
Great. And we're so grateful to have both of you.
Exactly.
And I think we'll go ahead and just jump right on in. So if you could share a bit more about yourselves, your background, what got you into this realm of mm-hmm. tenant organizing?
Well, for me, it started, I had met a lady years ago. There are a couple of issues that come to mind. It's been so long. I started volunteering with Community Alliance of Tenants and became a member in 2001. I didn't realize it was that long ago. I had met a lady who was in her 70s. She went into the hospital, and when she came out, she was in subsidized housing. She had no place to live because her rent wasn't paid in the hospital. So I went to the Home Forward Board and talked about how could this happen. This 72, 73-year-old lady is sleeping on the stairs of the Baptist Church. Mm. And so they've shored things up a little bit so people weren't falling through the cracks. And they told me, well, we have stuff to keep that in place. She's sleeping on the church. Mm. It's still happening. And the other issue comes to mind is years ago, a mobile home was bought by a California company, and they raised the rents. And mobile home parks, the folks own the mobile homes, and they pay a space rent, and had raised the rents to like $700, and the seniors were walking away from homes that they had paid for because they couldn't pay the space rent. Mm. So that's kind of how I started getting involved, and I did become disabled from the carelessness of a sober driver, so my income went way down, and I was a participant on the Oregon Health Plan, and I sort of got involved with Project Equality and the Oregon Health Action Campaign back in the day, too. So that's kind of how I got started. I didn't know I'd keep doing this I'm in my 60s now.
Wow. And could you share for our listeners who may not be aware, what is Home Forward?
Home Forward is the Housing Bureau of Multnomah County. They have several different programs. They have a goals program, which helps people better themselves, get better schooling, and buy their own homes. They run the Section 8 program, which the theory is that they help pay your rent, and the person that has a voucher pays approximately 30% of rent, but that's no longer the norm now because landlords are raising the rents and the people who have vouchers pay the difference over the caps that Home Forward has. And Home Forward also owns several buildings where the tenants living the buildings, it's 30% of the rent. It may be going up a little bit thanks to Ben Carson. And there are some people who've given up their vouchers to move into the 30% rent buildings because that last November I was paying 68% of my income for rent, and I do have a Section 8 voucher. Mm-hmm. Then I got a little bit of money from a car accident, and so for a couple of months I was on zero income, and I had my rent recalculated, and it went down substantially this year from approximately 35 to 38%, and I've had two rent increases since I got my settlement in August of last year, and this year, 14% rent hike. I get a rent hike every 6 months, so 14% of my income has gone back up, and the first rent increase They covered most of it. I paid $2 out of that rent increase, and this rent increase that I got started in September, I'm paying the full rent out money out of my pocket. So, you know, we need renter's relief. That might be another term I kind of like instead of rent control. Mm-hmm. Renter's relief. Mm-hmm. Several of my neighbors are paying 75% of their income for rent. They don't have vouchers. They're going without Medicaid. They stopped paying for that a few years ago because that's not free. Medicaid's not free when you retire. They glean $235 out of your check. Mm-hmm. I believe, and many of the seniors I talked to, when they got their Social Security cost of living increase, Medicaid took that. And so they really didn't get anything but more co-pays for prescriptions and doctor visits.
Mm. Wow. One last follow-up question, then we'll hear from Keith. Could you share a bit more about Project Equality in this Oregon Action Campaign?
The Oregon Health Action Campaign was a group that advocated for folks who were getting the Oregon Health Plan many years ago. Gosh, I can't remember how many now. The state separated the haves and the haves not. They had the Oregon Health Plus and the Oregon Health Minus. And with that, people who did not have an income were taken, had Oregon Health Plan Minus. And if they didn't have co-pays, they were going without prescriptions and stuff. And we're talking about mental health people who were jumping out windows and stuff. And the only ones you saw in this news were the ones who survived the jump and just broke a leg. Mm. But they advocated for low-income folks, prescriptions. I met a man who had a heart attack and he had like a $25,000 bill he couldn't pay. They helped advocate for him and it was written off. Mm. So wow. Project Equality was an umbrella of the Oregon Health Action Campaign. The Oregon Health Action Campaign, which was run by Ellen Penny, disbanded a few years ago because things were getting better at the time, but not so much now. So 66,000 seniors in the state of Oregon do not have doctor coverage and prescription coverage. They are playing Russian roulette with their medications. Mm. I live in a senior building, and last year 15 people passed, and so far this year 7.
Mm. Oh. Wow. Staggering.
It is staggering. And there was so much in that that I feel like would be good follow-up questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. We'll have a rich conversation. But let's hear a little bit from you, Keith.
Okay. Well, I'm a native Oregonian, grew up in Prineville, and moved up here to the Portland area in 1974. Mm-hmm. And I was born with a cerebral palsy, which limits some of the things I can do. I've worked, I got married, had a son, and then a few years later, my wife passed away because she had a brain tumor and it finally just took over. Mm-hmm. And so I've lived in the Portland area since 1974, and have lived in Gresham for the past 20 years just because I was priced out of the Portland area, and I am on a Section 8 voucher, which helps a lot. Otherwise, I would probably be homeless. Mm-hmm. And so, last year on February 2nd was the date of when at Portland City Hall, the RELO thing was passed. I was down there for that because I supported the proposal and a lot of the things. I live in Gresham. It wouldn't affect me, but I was in support of it. I went down there to support the thing. The next day, I get a no-cause eviction from my apartment because, I'd lived there for 11 years. It had been sold about 3 years before I moved, was forced out. from a company in Colorado. They have no idea what's going on, you know, here, and other than they can, well, they decided to remodel all the apartments and jack the rents up and everything. So anyway, they gave me a no-cause eviction because I was about the only apartment that hadn't been renovated. So here I go to Home Forward, the housing authority people, and because of my disability and my age, they said, oh, you're eligible to have a live-in aid. That would allow me to get a two-bedroom apartment, a little bit nicer apartment. So I think, okay, great. I applied to one, they accepted me, and then I waited and waited for Home Forward to get the paperwork and everything all taken care of. In the meantime, the place where I was at, I went past the date I was supposed to be out of there, and I still hadn't heard from Home Forwards. You know, I have to wait for them before I can move. And the sheriff showed up at my door, locked me out, and gave me 10 minutes to grab whatever I could and vacate the premises. Okay, this was like 3 days before my 64th birthday. And so I was looking forward to, you know, the day that even the Beatles sang about, you know, will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? You know, okay. Yeah. So to the graces of my son, who is 40 years old, married, lives about 3 blocks away from where I raised him, he put me up in his house for a few days and then rented me in a motel room for 3 weeks until everything got settled. So if it weren't for him, I would have been homeless last summer. And so I got moved in. Everything's going well. Still trying to get the caregiver thing straightened out. The one person that I agreed to help me out with it, I don't know if she's ever taken the class yet, but I think she has by now, but still haven't heard. But anyway, you know, so everything's going well, and then a friend of mine decides, after spending a couple of months in county custody or whatever in jail, decides to, when he gets out, that he wants to use my address for his address. He doesn't live there. He doesn't stay there, anything. So,
oh, P.O. Box Keith.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So anyway, tells his parole officer that he's living there where he's not living. He's, you know, but anyway, the parole officer goes to the manager of the apartment complex and, who's this guy? And I say, you know, and she says, I don't know. And so I get a no-cause eviction from them. So now I'm trying to find a new apartment. And not being able to find anything because I have an eviction from 1 year ago. So, you know, my landlord right now gave me a little bit more time. So I've got until November 9th to get out. Wow. And so I'm kind of fighting it a little bit and going to my, I'm going through legal aid and a couple other places to try to get a little bit of relief off of this thing. And so I'm just waiting to see what happens. And, you know, I'm just hoping for the best.
Wow. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing that, Keith.
Yes. Thank you both for being here and sharing your stories with us. So I also want to take a moment to mention that our callers are welcome to join the conversation now that we've heard a bit of an intro from both of our guests. We're going to jump into some more questions. But if anybody would like to join the conversation, if you have any questions for Deborah or Keith or any insights yourself on housing policy, tenant protections, etc., our phone number is 503-231-8187. Again, that is 503-231-8187. So let's continue this conversation and set the stage to bring more context into the conversation for our listeners as we jump into some of the current policies that you're working on. Could one of you share what the Community Alliance of Tenants is and does?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The Community Alliance of Tenants has been around 22 years. I believe they're going on their 23rd year anniversary. They run the Renter's Rights Hotline, where renters can call and get information about their rights as renters, if they're having an eviction problem or repair issues. CAT has materials that they can either email or send in the mail to help them write letters to the landlord and stuff. We're not attorneys, but we can tell them what the law is. If you went to an attorney, you'd be paying, what, $250, $300 an hour? Mm-hmm. It used to be called something else back in the day, and I think the city used to run it, and it separated, and CAT's been a nonprofit, and about a year and a half ago, they started a 501c4 so that they can start raising money to endorse candidates who support housing issues. I was on the board of CAT for 4 years, so it was a pleasure being on the board and working with a great bunch of people. It really broke my heart when Justin Burry passed a couple of years ago. And but you know, some when CAT first started out, they'd be in the red sometimes, and you know, and now their CAT's doing really well, and they have a few more staffs. But without the wonderful volunteers that come and help, and they get training on what the laws are and stuff, so they can talk to people on the phones. You know, CAT would still be struggling. You know, so I'm also a part of Bus Riders Unite, and I was displaced out of Portland almost 4 years ago. The apartment I was renting didn't pass. I also have a Section 8 voucher, didn't pass 4 home inspections and 3 City of Portland inspections. So I had to find a place. And I called around and kind of told my story that I had, you know, so much time to find a place, and I might have been homeless. And I was actually looking in the state of Washington, and oh my gosh, at the time I didn't know they only had 21-day no cause. So, whoa. Wow. And a senior building called me back and said, hey, somebody gave notice, so you can move in. So it's a lot quieter. There are issues for sure, because sometimes management talks to some of the seniors like we're children and kindergartners. And but that's another story. But this was tax 42 housing up until it's still tax 42. It was lower income up until January, and so we've been getting 6-month rent hikes for the last year and a half, and every year my rent has gone up. And for the first 3 years, I didn't get a Social Security raise. This year, I got a Social Security raise, but my rent's gone up twice this year, 14% versus the 2%. Like I said, many of my neighbors pay different prices, different income levels. There are some people who get about $2,000 a month, and they're kind of doing okay. Another rent hike, they might be hurting a little more. Mm-hmm. So, but we've organized. I had two neighbors across the street because we have a 63-unit family building that's part of my community, which wasn't mentioned when I moved in. Mm-hmm. Surprise. And they came to me and said, oh, we just got $100 rent hikes. This was about a year and a half ago. So I said, what can we do? Well, I went to the Fair Housing Facebook page, and source of income is a violation, or, you know, it's protected class. And so they filed fair housing complaints, and I started going to the Gresham City meetings. And the first time I went, I sat through three and said, okay, this isn't the right one. This isn't the, here's the one I can do public comment. And my neighbors are getting rent hikes substantial in their low income. And I'd been going to them for a few months. And then one day, a group, Pueblo Unido, started talking about the Rockwood rent hikes and people being displaced. And Pam from the CAT, Community Alliance of Tenants, was sitting in the audience that day to kind of support me. And so she talked to Francisco and Cam, and we joined forces and made the Gresham Housing for the People, buy renters for renters. And we're having a march on Election Day, November 6th, and we're hoping renters will come out because Mayor Bemis in the Gresham City Council needs to give us the same or similar protections as other people in the state of Oregon have at Multnomah County. There are other cities that do have 90 days protections, but not relo yet. But we need renters relief, that's for sure. It's just staggering.
There were several things in there that I wanted to ask. So I don't know if we've done a breakdown of what Bus Riders Unite is yet with Opal. Would one of you be able to speak to that, Keith?
Well, about 8 years ago, I was out waiting for a bus in the middle of the summer. It was like 95 degrees. And there were people, there was someone on the bus that was just asked me a question. Says, I'd like to know about your transit experience. I told her, point blank, I says, sorry, I'm having a senior moment for a second here, but
no,
yeah, but I just said, do you have enough time? Mm-hmm. And so she said, well, we're with this bus riders group with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon. So I got started volunteering with them. I hadn't done anything like that in my life. And so I go and testify at the TriMet board meetings and, you know, do actions about dealing with transit and go and talking to people on the buses and, you know, getting their ideas on how we can change transit, you know, make transit better for the people. And so we have done, we worked our first major campaign was we called it the Campaign for a Fair Transfer. It extended transfer times to 2.5 hours.
Yes.
And then we worked with TriMet on the low income fare, did a lot of the research and everything on it. And so, you know, and we've done a lot of things with TriMet and you know, it's interesting, you know, and I never thought that I would be someone that would be doing something like that, you know, but it's what keeps me focused on things. I'm 65 years old now, and I have been a low-income person, but I've been lucky that I've been eligible for the Honored Citizen Fare, that I didn't have to go to the low income fare. So, you know, we have done a lot of things. I still think back on 8 years ago when we had our first rally, when it was, we'd close off the street in front of where we were located. And one of the people that was there that was an entertainer happened to be Esperanza Spalding.
Oh, hey.
3 months later, she got her Grammy Award for Best Jazz Vocalist. And so we were able to listen to her before she became famous, you know, yeah.
Love it.
Original fan.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right, she's from Portland.
Yes.
Yeah.
She went through the, yeah.
Around that time as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just kind of special, you know. I still think of that as being a special moment, you know.
Yeah, so what did you say that rally was about again?
It was, we were just kind of getting started and kind of getting the idea of what we were going to, our first major campaign would be, and I think it was just not too long after that is when the Campaign for Fair Transfer began, and then when it finally passed, we made a giant
big transfer
mm-hmm. and hung it off the Burnside Bridge by
Saturday Market.
Perfect. Yeah, oh, it was that was fun. Yeah, that was a fun day because it was really nice weather, and it was like the 1st of March or something, a couple of 3 years ago, and you know, it's been a lot of fun.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And BRU is trying to get TriMet to pay for Youth Pass and keep it permanently funding, and they have the money to do that. They just kind of are fighting and balking at it. I think that. Not giving students a free bus pass would give them one more reason to drop out.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Keith mentioned the food stamp bus pass. There are 5,000 bus passes that any adult between 18 to 64 can apply for and get a lower bus pass since rents are so high, food costs are so high, and they're getting food stamps already. So the work is done to show that they're low income enough and they can apply online to TriMet. I assume TriMet could do it over the phone or something. Send a paper application. I don't know because I don't work for TriMet.
Right.
And but get a instead of paying $100 bus pass, they can get the bus pass for $28. Mm. And so if you know people who are struggling, tell them and they're taking the bus. Let them have them apply and get some relief, bus relief. So
that's a good tip.
Yes.
Yes. It's, keep it's sharing.
Wild. Thank
that
you.
They're not more publicized and. Mm-hmm. What? They aren't being taken advantage of.
Well, I have a lot of neighbors who don't even know how to turn on a computer. And when you say, well, you use the mouse. What? Where's the mouse?
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Many of the older generation, and then there's some of my neighbors who are so tech savvy. I know how to go to the library and scan stuff in an email, but I don't know how to attach an email.
Right.
Anything to an email. So
right.
I'm... A little bit, you know, I can do emails, so.
Yeah, it would seem like there would be good opportunity for TriMet to share this information out through social service providers and other community-based organizations for those who might access those services but don't have email or access to that info otherwise.
There was another thing that was brought up, Deborah, you mentioned it, Pueblo Unido.
Yes.
Would you mind speaking more to that?
Well, I can speak a little bit. That was a group that was started a little over a year ago. They were concerned about Rockwood residents being displaced. They were also concerned because I've done some door knocking in some of the apartments right off of 82nd, and the name of the apartments is shorting me out. But they're getting $100 rent hikes every 6 months. And
Rockwood in particular?
Rockwood in particular, yes. Okay. And also, they raise money to help some of the folks who've been arrested by ICE, and you know, with legal fees and stuff. So, you know, so they're trying to help their community out. I know they do stuff for food pantry and some other stuff, and they had been talking to the Gresham Council and stuff behind closed doors, mm-hmm. and not in a public forum, and you know, trying to get renters relief, and they finally did the public testimony, and that's how we connected. It's okay. You know, so they're a 501c3 nonprofit also, and they've just been on hit the ground a little more than a year ago, and I think they're doing really well, and they have mm-hmm. some fantastic people that are running the program. Mm-hmm.
So could you speak a little bit more? I love that, you know, we've been touching on the Gresham Housing for the People Coalition, Pueblo Unido, Community Alliance of Tenants, Bus Riders Unite. Could you share a bit more about the connections between the issues of transportation and housing?
Mm-hmm. Keith, I always say they're like this, two fingers together. They're, mm-hmm. they go hand in hand mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. usually... when you know, when housing gets too high, you can't afford a car, so you're dependent on transit to get back and forth. Or there, mm-hmm. you know, like there, I used to drive, but my license was suspended about 20 some years ago, and it. The time I thought, well, I'm not gonna fight it because it's too expensive to drive your car. So I, you know, it's a lot cheaper to just use transit, and so mm-hmm. that's what I became transit dependent, and so that's yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And where I live right off of Burnside, not close to the Civic Street, but not close to the Civic Max station. That's a 15-minute hike. When you go down one block and you do a right-hand turn, that's all dirt. So we have no bus. So I thought, oh, I'm moving on Burnside. Yay, the number 20. Well, the number 20 turns on Stark on about 102nd and goes up Stark, which is a mile away. Mm-hmm. Several of my neighbors cannot get to the Max. On a bad day, I can't get to the Max. But I've always kept my TriMet Lift services up for at least 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the TriMet Lift Pass is $74 versus $28. So some of my neighbors, many of my neighbors are paying almost three times as much for a bus ride. We have no bus service out there. And a couple of my neighbors have gone in debt. They're like paying $300 a month more for a car now because mm-hmm. there's no bus service. And, you know, it's sad. And many of my neighbors, they own their cars or they have a few payments left. And a couple of my neighbors, I don't want to be mean, but probably shouldn't even have a driver's license, but they have to have a car because they can't get around. And you know, there's like there's Walmart has a bus that comes and picks a few people up and takes them to the grocery store two or three times a month, and the Ride Connection bus comes a couple times a week also, different times, and they go maybe Winco, Freddy's, Safeway. And but we have 100, I have 189 other neighbors, and those few bus trips don't cut it. And if you've ever taken a TriMet Lift ride, you have a half hour waiting period. Like to come here on the TriMet Lift today, to be here at 7:45, they were going to pick me up from 5:41 to, you know, that 30 minute window. Mm-hmm. And they weren't going to come and get me, even though I knew I was going to be down at 9, they couldn't come get me till 9:41. So, and then you're riding around for a couple of hours, sometimes, right. many times picking people up and dropping other people off. Right. It's a great service, door-to-door service. But it's, you know, is expensive. And I mean, right now I think I'm paying 54% of my rent or my income for rent and a $74 bus pass. You know, it's just really tough. Mm-hmm. So,
ouch.
Seriously. Yeah. And I don't buy a bus pass. I just go buy rides. So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, what sparked these conversations about tenant protections? You mentioned that the Gresham Housing for the People Coalition was formed. Could you share a bit more about, you know, how these conversations came about?
Well, I believe it was in 2014, 2015. For a few years, I was doing data entry at the Community Alliance of Tenants. I could volunteer my time. I'm getting Social Security disability. I can give back to the community. And I remember the first data entry sheet that I had done, this gentleman over 65 had gotten, he was getting $1,000 income. He lived just on the other side of 39th. And the landlord doubled his rent from $750 to $1,500. And that used to be, that's kind of a lazy way to evict somebody. But then landlords started raising the rents and people were calling the hotline asking for Cat for help. You know, we're getting $300 rent hikes, $400. I have a neighbor who they gave her a no-cause eviction. And after she moved out, they had turned around and doubled the rent from $750 to $1,500 in Gresham. And she became homeless at 75 years old. So, it's landlord greed. It's, you know, they're not making improvements in the apartments and in the homes and stuff. They're just lining their pockets. And so enough people were calling the hotline asking for help that Justin Burry and Katrina Holland and the Cat did the render state of emergency September 15, 2015. Mm. And four buildings had gotten building-wide evictions, which is wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's been just one after the other. Bend is expensive to live. The rural areas are having high rent hikes, and Gresham, they're getting them. The one lady testified, I got a 36% rent hike. If you want to know how much that is, it's $300. And a young lady who did my nails at PCC, Mount Hood Community College. I go to the beauty shop because the beauty school there, because most of the services are a lot cheaper than the place. She was telling me she had just gotten a $350 rent hike. And she goes, I pay for my own childcare stuff. I'm a single mother now. I just got a divorce last year. My child's 6 and $350 rent hike. And she lives in Gresham. So,
wow. For those listeners as well who are just tuning in, we are speaking with Deborah Olson and Keith Schultz, with both working with the Gresham Housing for the People Coalition and also with Bus Riders Unite, with Opal. And if you'd like to call in to ask any questions or talk about your thoughts about this conversation, the call-in number is 503-231-8187. Just thought I would interject that really quick, yes. Unless anyone wanted to call in.
That's right. You're listening to Native Voices from the Edge, our final broadcast. I have been really inspired. When I first became engaged with Cat, it was around 2015 when I was, working in the nonprofit realm as well. And there was some advocacy that formed around anti-displacement PDX. We successfully advocated for anti-displacement principles to be woven into the city's comprehensive plan, which was updated that year. And so that was, how I got to know all of these amazing folks at the Community Alliance of Tenants around that same time as well. A year later, I got a no-cause eviction myself and was displaced from my home of 7 years. Because the guy wanted to, buy the place out and renovate it and do whatever he had to do with it. But, around that time, all of these issues just started to hit so close to home. And, we've also had these conversations here on this show about, housing and anti-displacement principles, being pillars of climate resilience, because our folks are continuing to get pushed out of the central city. I'm back in Gresham where I grew up. We're on the City of Gresham Housing Task Force. We had a little meeting last night. It's so tough when you don't have good transit service. And if you don't have that ability to walk, where I live, for example, I could hop on the number 9. Keith, we're neighbors.
We live close. real close.
It's about a 20-minute walk if you don't want to wait for the good old 82 bus, which may or may not show up. And so as our folks are getting pushed farther and farther out of the central city, out to the outskirts of our region, those options aren't there to live a low carbon lifestyle as easily as folks who are living right here in the central city.
We have a caller on the line.
Oh,
Liz.
Hello, Liz.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Hi. I just had a comment about something that was said, and that was that I'm a mom and pop landlord. And, you know, let's see, the comment was that the landlords are raising the rent every year and they're not renovating. They're just lining their pockets. But, you know, every year my taxes and insurance go up. And that means my income goes down. And so I have tenants that have been with me many years, and they're just great. And I try not to raise rent, but, you know, what is, so my income goes down, and am I going to have to subsidize other people? So I'm just saying, landlords are not just lining their pockets all the time. You know, our taxes and insurance go up every single year. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Liz.
Deborah, would you like to respond? Or Keith? I think you were the one who she was speaking to. Go ahead.
Well, there's a portlandmaps.com is a wonderful website, and you can put in pretty much any address and check what the taxes are. And where I live, it's been the same. $88,000 in property tax divided by 190 renters for the last 4 years. So every year out of my rent and the help with the Home Forward Section 8 voucher, I pay $4,637 of property tax. I just don't write the check. And I know there are good landlords out there, and there are some questionable landlords out there. I've done door knocking where there's been mold and cockroaches, bad plumbing, heaters that don't work, rust. And sometimes I think the building should be burnt down and rebuilt from the ground. It's just that nasty. And but I do understand that, you know, the water bill's gone up, but I have friends that live in a nineplex and their rent went up $300 and each tenant. And he's, oh, the property tax went up. Well, not $27,000 a year. And that's in Southeast Portland.
Yes. Thank you. Keith, do you have any reflections or responses?
Not really. other than my mother-in-law is a landlord, and she actually, I've talked to her a few times about this, and she is supportive of the rent protections. She just owns a apartment that's right next to her home, so she, you know, but you know, doesn't have, you know, hundreds of units or anything, but she's told me that she is definitely in favor of some of these protections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in our Gresham Housing Task Force meeting last night, there was this figure of renter incomes nationally are not keeping pace with the rent increases. And from 2001 to 2015, there are, you know, the values of both the housing income, household income, median household income, as well as the rent cost. And we see, you know, just a straight line up with the rent costs, whereas the household income has roughly stayed the same. And, you know, I think this is a challenge for all of us because of this system that we live in, you know, driven by capitalism and commodification of people and living beings, that many, many of us are struggling, both renters as well as, you know, the smaller landlords, you know, because we've been forced into this system that makes housing provision a profitable industry for many, and doesn't prioritize first and foremost social and ecological well-being. So we need more, you know, more community-based initiatives. I love the idea of like land trusts and ways to, you know, keep housing costs affordable for folks, because people shouldn't have to pay 80% of their income on rent. One great example includes the Oakleaf Mobile Home Park, which many different folks have been working to save and to preserve, because, you know, a lot of those large mobile home parks are at risk of being bought out and converted into something more profitable. But the city recognizes that, you know, through these nonprofit partnerships with St. Vincent de Paul, with the Living Cully Partners, you know, that mobile homes are a really great, you know, a really great way to help preserve housing affordability.
Right. I'm also looking at the time and thinking, I would love to ask all three of you too, what, for listeners who are tuned in right now, what's one way that someone can get involved to support the work that you're doing?
Well, there are so many things. They can volunteer at BRU, Bus Riders Unite, Opal. They're right on 82nd, right off of Powell. They can also volunteer at the Community Alliance of Tenants. They can volunteer at Pueblo Unido. And also organize and come join us on the 6th of November for our march. We're actually starting at the County Clinic on 600 Northwest 8th. We'll be there approximately 2:30. Our goal is to go to do a little walk to the library and bring your ballots and put them in the ballot box while you're there.
Love it.
And, I'm saving mine for that.
We're shooting for a 5 p.m. rally at City Hall. And at 4:45, if you've got stories you want to share with the mayor, by all means, sign up and do public testimony. You can bet I'll be chatting. And the City Hall meeting starts at 6. I don't know if they will cancel that meeting and go out and do last-minute rallying to get reelected. But we definitely need renters relief in the city of Gresham. I think Troutdale and Fairview will fall through. We've had a few people come to our meetings who also live in mobile home parks in Troutdale and stuff, and they're paying almost $1,000 space rent, and they own their homes. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they get water and garbage.
Wow.
While they're, you know, and they're seniors too. They're nervous. They're, wow. And so I've met a lot of wonderful people. I hear the horror stories, and I've known people whose places have been trashed. My son actually has a house in Marion County, and his tenant, Darren Jungworth, we gave him a notice to move, and he literally destroyed the house, vandalized it. It can't be rented to another person. It's still in repairs. You know, and sometimes that happens. You get a really vindictive renter who just screws the place up, and you know, it's too bad. So somebody who's houseless could have been living in there, but this guy was just bad wow. renter. I did a background check after Katie had done it and found all these liens and other issues, and you know, should have never even rented to him. But 4 years ago, they sort of needed a renter, and whatever background check Katie did, because whoever he's renting from now didn't call my son for a reference, so he probably has his friends, you know, being the pretend landlords or something. But yeah,
mm-hmm. let's put a pin in that question.
Caller.
Yes. We have another caller.
Edith,
you're on the line.
Edith, you're live. Are you with us? Maybe Edith hopped off.
Maybe if you call back,
still
Edith.
Here. Can you still hear me?
I can hear you.
Yes, we can hear you now.
What I want to do is provide Native Voices of the Edge context, empathy, and some solutions. I know you don't have a lot of time. So it's been centuries of intentionally moving poor people or anyone that starts getting uppity away from their land, their community, their power base, so they can't resist. And we can recognize that, not take it personally, and respond to the systemic stuff in public policy. It's the public policy that says what corporations can and cannot do, whether housing is a human right or a commodity for profiteering or a means of oppression and genocide. Mm-hmm. So we can decide that. We can act on that. Immediately, we can make sure that we vote for State Measure 102, and in Portland, 26-199 for housing, and we can vote with the City of Portland for Joanne Hardesty. We can vote in Portland for the Portland Clean Energy Fund that would provide weatherization, insulation, rooftop solar, independence, and food infrastructure so to counter the racism, this ageism, the disablism, et cetera, that prevents people from being able to stay in their homes and destroys our communities. So we can vote for 26-199 in Portland, John Hardesty, and for the Portland Clean Energy Fund, 26-201, Joanne Hardesty. And then collectively, we can rethink and decolonize our minds so that we're not just victims, helpless. We can recognize that we do have a right, we have a necessity, we're required here. And one of the things we can do for apartment buildings is require that they not impinge on free speech and that they not attack democracy, so that they each unit facing the street has a space in which they can have their free speech, if it's their lawn signs or whatever it is, and that for folks who are going door-to-door to give them information, to provide them services, cat going door-to-door, isn't that possible in apartment complexes when it's locked entry and you don't know the names of different folks there, so that there can be ways in which each person gets to have information flyers that it's illegal to put in a mailbox, but that can perpetuate the continuity, the uniting of tenants and community members together. And we can also come up with ways that are safe, fair, and appropriate for the small and responsible, humane landlord. And we can hold accountable those out-of-state landlords on the big monster thing. So there's a lot we can do both in our own rethinking, our voting, our conversation, public policy permits, and uniting with each other.
Thank you so much, Edith.
Yes,
you're a powerhouse.
Yes, I think you had a wonderful comment. I don't live in Portland, so I can't vote for Joanne, but I do support her, and I hope she wins. So you had some excellent information there. There are a lot of people from north, northeast were pushed out when they put the MAX lines in years ago, and they're in Gresham now, and according to Gresham statistics, there's about 5% of the population are African American, and 19% are Spanish, and 66% are Caucasian. So I guess the other few percents are everybody else. And I was displaced 4 years ago, and if rents keep going up in Gresham, I could be displaced again. I came close to being houseless 4 years ago in December, and I finally found a place. I do see lots of for rent signs out, but the rents are too high. I couldn't afford to rent it there. And I became disabled in 1990 when I was hit by a car and shoved into another car. And so I'm had my seatbelts on. That's why I'm here today.
The rent is too dang high.
That's right.
Well, we've just got about 2 minutes left, so we're gonna wrap things up. Do you have any final words for our listeners?
I'm just gonna say that I live in Gresham. I can't vote for Joanne Hardesty, but I know her and think she's doing a great job. But I'm actually volunteering with the Clean Energy Initiative thing, so I've done things for them, and I support it, so we got a lot of, we had a rally with a bunch of us out in front of the Walmart on 82nd Holgate a month or so ago, and oh, that was nice.
Yeah, it was.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
it was
fun.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, Keith. Deborah, any final words? We've got about a minute.
Be sure and vote. Turn in your ballot. Mm-hmm. I physically cannot march from Kelly Street to the library and to City Hall. You'll probably just see me near the City Hall, maybe the library. But I'm not going to hold my breath on that. Vote. Join us for the march. And if you get any rent hikes, you can always share those with displacement@OregonCat.org. Mm. Tell your story. Perfect. And be sure and call the mayor's office and share it with them, the mayor of Gresham and the mayor of Portland, too.
Yes. Well, so. Thank you both for joining us. Thanks to all of our amazing guests throughout our time. Thanks to Joanne. Thanks to Derek and John and Heather, all of our producers.
Yes.
I'm Carrie Waters.
And I'm Amory Shack.
And you have listened to We're signing off for now. Native Voices
from the Edge. We tribe, we one, connected to the earth, the seven generations, warriors of the future, giving rebirth for the people of the future. We stand up and fight, we fight for what's right. We pray to manifest our dreams from the sleepless nights. This is our life, this is our light. Our land intertwines with our mind, it's our sacred.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. This month, our meeting of the KABU Board of Directors will be on Monday, October 29th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Cider Riot at 807 Northeast Coote Street in Portland.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Art-A-Thon with Impact on Saturday, November 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. Art-A-Thon with Impact is a 12-hour creativity and wellness festival. Young people are invited to participate in groups. In 8 hours, each group will create an original artwork that is connected to themes of mental health and wellness. A festival from 6 until 9 showcases all performances and artwork open for all to attend. Again, that's the Art-A-Thon with Impact on Saturday, November 3rd, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Agnes Flanagan Chapel at Lewis and Clark College, 0615 Southwest Palatine Hill Road in Portland. More information may be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.